Hello and welcome to Roundpeg Podcast. I'm your host, Ali Barhani, geostrategy expert with Family Enterprise Foundation and the Managing Director of 360 Strategic Advisors. Joining me today from Toronto, Canada is Dr. Gina Parvana Cody. Gina immigrated to Canada from Iran in 1979, going to hold a master's and a doctorate in building engineering from Concordia University. She's the first woman awarded a PhD in building engineering at Concordia. 30 years later, and after a stellar career in construction and engineering, she went to become the recipient of Award of Merit by Canadian Standards Association, and then awarded the Order of Montreal in 2019, and then being named as one of the top 25 women of influence in Canada in 2020. But Gina is also a philanthropist. In 2018, she donated a historic $15 million gift to Concordia University's Faculty of Engineering and Computer Science. In honor of that professional accomplishment and that generosity, the faculty then was renamed as the Gina Cody School of Engineering and Computer Science. It is the first engineering faculty in Canada, and for that matter, one of the first internationally named after a woman. We will be talking about the role of women, the importance of women's presence in engineering and STEM field, and why lifelong learning matters, and evermore, why giving back is an obligation and not an option. Gina Parvana Cody, welcome to Roundpeg Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's September 3rd, 2020. You're in Toronto. I'm in London, yet 1979 is 4 decades and 1 year long since you touched down and arrived at Concordia. Can you share with us some of the early memories of arriving in Montreal and arriving in Canada? Can you close your eyes and go back on your first impressions of your arrival?
Oh, that's, as you said, it's 4 decades ago, over 4 decades ago. And I was a young graduate, young engineer, left Iran during the revolution of 1979. And for those of you that know history, it was during the hostage crisis in Iran. I left, and ironically, my flight had a stop in New York, and then from New York to Montreal. So I had a bit of a dilemma there because, obviously, of the situation. I arrived in Montreal and during the Labor Day weekend. So the classes were to start after the Labor Day Monday. And, you know, I had a brother there in Montreal, and so I went to his place for that weekend. And then I was supposed to go to the neighboring university. I wasn't supposed to go to Concordia. My acceptance from Iran was to the other university. And when I arrived, I had only $2,000 in my pocket. There was, the situation was so that you couldn't bring money from Iran. Everything was really, really in turmoil. So my brother had arranged a meeting between me and this professor, because he had just graduated from Concordia in the engineering department, and he knew this professor, and he said, I had mentioned your name, and he said, why don't you bring her to meet me before she gets enrolled? So I went to see this professor named Cedric Marsh, actually a British professor, and he interviewed me for an hour, looked at my other acceptance, and looked at my marks, and then he said, why would you go anywhere else? Come to Concordia. And he took me to the registrar's office, and they issued me a acceptance within an hour. This is, things have changed quite drastically since then. It's not the same anymore. You can't do these things that quickly. And then he gave me a letter. He says, go to Immigration Canada and get your work permit. So by noon, I had my work permit. So I came out, I told my brother, can we go to the immigration? He says, what are you talking about? So it was such a life-changing because I couldn't get money from Iran. I was a girl, just graduated, very young. So it was a transformation of my growth and youth to a person in a new country, and I couldn't believe my luck. At the time, you take everything for granted, obviously.
Yeah, of course. But you were a graduate from Aryameh Sharif University of Technology, which is in itself like the MIT of Iran, right? And then you arrive in Montreal. But the underlining development of yours was your mother's influence and her encouragement for you to be independent, to you and your sister, if I get it right, and your brother as well, but to the girls in the house much more. Are you today independent, dependent, or interdependent? and how you categorize that love and encouragement from your mom in where you have arrived?
I think that was something that was engraved in me from childhood. Anytime I would stay up, and I was a perfectionist. I wanted to have 100% on all my marks, which in the stage of really obsession, I didn't let me enjoy my youth because I always wanted to be perfect. In Iran, our marks were out of 20. If I would get 19.75, I wouldn't sleep the night because I was a failure in my brain. I didn't do well, which is not a good attitude for a young girl, but I don't know why I always had that drive in me to be like that, which was, I think, in part enforced by both my mom and my dad, that they wanted me to be perfect. If I brought 20, they will be happy. If it was under, they weren't happy as much as they should have been.
But that's a lot of pressure, Gina, right? That's a lot of
it
pressure.
It is a lot of pressure, but I wanted them, it's not that they would tell me or would criticize me. I wanted to make them happy because I was the youngest child. Because the boys weren't like that. My three brothers were not by any a stretch of imagination perfectionists. No, all three became engineers. They all studied, but they weren't perfectionists, and they were not top of their class. My sister became a dentist. She wasn't. I don't know why I felt that in me to prove myself to be the best.
Well, we'll come to that. Strangely enough, characteristics you just talk about may resonate of one of a nerdy, but you are not. You were nicknamed as Dr. Fix-It. where is that title coming from? How did you become to be known as Dr. Fix-It?
That was in my early on as being an engineer in Toronto. It was a title that was given to one of the biggest newspapers in Toronto. Toronto Star, that they interviewed me, and it kind of stuck with me after that. It was because people who had problems, they would call me and I would go, and I wouldn't get out of there till I could find the solution in their construction deficiencies or whatever was wrong in their building. So I was a building engineer.
So tell us a bit about Construction Control Inc. I mean, in Woodbridge, in an Italian neighborhood, a Persian young engineer comes and starts establishing roots. What did Construction Control Inc. do and do it best under your, management and years there? Tell us a bit about the history of the company.
The company was a boutique consulting firm. So we had a lot of clients that they were developers, they were major developers, there were major real landlords in the, whether it was commercial or residential, and Toronto was going through the biggest construction boom in its history. So having these clients who relied on you and trusted you, and they all had started, those clients started small as well. So they had grown with the economy of Canada and Toronto, especially. So being there at the right time, I think it was quite helpful. And the main issue was that they trusted your input. So you had to be good. You had to give them right advice. And I couldn't have done that without the help of great engineers around me. So you had to have a team to be able to address any issue. So our company did from soil and environmental to building science, roofing, all the environmental issues. So you name it, we would have a specialized engineer who could assist you on that. So it was a one-stop shop, but in a smaller format that we would give them that personal attention that a developer or a landlord really wants. That you
is that missing today, Gina? Is that today missing in the industry? Do you think those days of personal attention to each sector, particularly in engineering, are gone?
I believe so. I think you still get great advice, but the everything has become institutionalized by creating public companies and creating engineering companies that are international. Obviously, the source of and resources are there. But do people get that personal attention, and do they get to speak to the right person immediately when they want it? I'm not sure that exists. But I'm sure there are some smaller firms around the world that are doing great jobs, and they will be grown to bigger firms, but the expectation in the industry as a whole is for everyone to grow. The bottom line is important. Your margins are important. And as you grow, there is nothing, it's inevitable that you are going to lose that personal touch.
Mm-hmm. Along the way, you acquired through CCI or Construction Control Inc., a lot of other companies. And do you think women are better and at acquisitions and post-acquisition integration? Do you think that matriarch type of spirit is more helpful? And what are your key learnings from these acquisitions at the time of them?
That's a difficult one, because the ones that I found successful, they were the ones that they were relationship between the owner who came to me and said, okay, Gina, would you be wanting, you know, I'm retiring, I want somebody to take care of my staff. There was that relationship between the owner of the company and his or her staff. And they wanted to transfer that goodwill to someone that cares. But when it comes to acquisition that is all dollar and cents, the transformation, I think, is never as successful. And those relationships, do they still exist? I am not sure, but I see that. I sit on public company boards, and I do see when we do acquisitions that the owner wants to deal with us because trusts us. And that trust is something that is invaluable in any line of business, because you get better pricing and you get complete cooperation. But when you're bidding on something and you are the best buyer, that doesn't necessarily transfers itself or transforms to the best acquisition.
I hear you. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you is that you have been the president of Canadian Condominium Institute, and, you know, sat and provided professional services to some of the largest real estate investment trust funds and financial institutions, builders, developers. Do you think Canada's real estate landscape today, at least where you're sitting in Toronto and where you're exposed heavily in Montreal, is developing in a harmonious, sustainable, and I would say environmentally friendly? Are your ambitions and aspirations as an engineer being manifested on the streets where you live? Or do you think that there is a gap in the market?
I think we could do way better than we are doing. And the transformation of vertical villages that we are creating, and over the past number of years, especially Toronto, I would say even over the past decades, our buildings are getting taller and taller and taller. The city's acceptance of the height of buildings every year changes because obviously it adds to the revenue. Because you collect more taxes, you create density, and you have more people, and those people bring in with them economy that goes with it. But something that we fail to address, the environmental impacts of going vertical rather than even horizontal, you have to be careful how you do your expansion and how you organize it. I think there should be height limits on buildings. And COVID may have given us a lesson on that, because now most office buildings, everybody cannot get on the elevator. We don't have enough elevators. And how you're going to go to the 40th or 50th floor as a person? It's great for young people who want to do their morning exercise, but if you have to come down and up again, you know, if you pass certain age, you know, that's you're done for the day. So I think they have to rethink that, and we will see what happens after. Will we be more conscious of our environment? And so to answer your question is no.
Okay, but also community building, Gina, as well. I mean, because building is one thing, developing a proper community that would foster and bond is different. I mean, going back to your story of how you arrived and by lunchtime, you had a work permit and everything with immigration and school was set. It doesn't happen like that these days. And, you know, and Canada is a net, recipient of immigrants every year. So the role of real estate would be substantially important in how these communities function, prosper, and develop. Don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. We are looking at smart cities. Now, how are smart cities will look and how it will integrate, because we cannot sustain our environment, our world, the way we are proceeding. It's just impossible. Just to give you an example, Toronto, because we have all these high rises, anytime it rains, we get flooding. Our sewage system is not built for all of this. So they give permits to buildings to be built, but they forget about the sewage system cannot handle this, because now nothing is porous. We are putting asphalt everywhere. We are covering it with 40-story buildings, and all the water is going to the storm sewage. And, you know, it's just all of these are compounding together without any forethought and of all the issues that arises just from allowing construction without thinking. But, you know, the transportation, you know, smart cities goes beyond many things that is important. And actually, one of my contributions to Concordia was that, you know, we are working on smart cities, and we want it's one of the best universities in Canada and the world on the smart cities that are looking into that. And absolutely, communities are the heart of our well-being. And I don't think it exists. We are eliminating them by creating vertical cities.
When I learned about your journey and what you have, you know, done and accomplished, I see that you're the first woman to finish your PhD, 2 times graduating Concordia, and then obviously calling the first engineering school after a female in Canada for the first time after your name. When you compare the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and the number of graduates in Canada versus where you come from, like Middle East or Iran for that matter, how do these two societies then and now stack up in terms of women and female in STEM fields?
At the time when I came to Canada, I was surprised. We had more women in engineering program and where I was graduating at the Sharif University, with the universities across Canada, not just only Concordia. There were much less women here in North America than were in Iran. In today's society, again, you compare Canada or North America with Iran, there are more women in Iran studying in the STEM program than are in North America.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is. And the question is why? And when I have been trying, and many people have been trying to find the reason, and it goes to parents, people who are providing education, teachers and schools are not promoting STEM to girls as much as they are doing it to the boys.
You mean in Canada?
Absolutely. I give you an example. In Gatineau in Quebec, that's in 2019, a school there came and they segregated grade 5 science class, and they sent the boys to robotics and the girls to gardening and cooking. I was.
Wow.
And there was obviously a lot of op-eds in the newspapers in Montreal and Quebec that was just raising eyebrows, and all the women especially, they were quite dismayed. So that is our today's society. And we have to address that. And that's one of my missions. I'm trying to address this in my small way.
Well, I wouldn't brand it as a small way. You have done magnificently well in contributing $15 million. I was the other day thinking about our call, and I did the math, and I said that, you know, from the day you have been graduated, it came to average $500,000 per year of contribution, you know. So I think Cedric Marsh and your brother have done a great service to Concordia, not only for convincing you to study there, but for what has to follow as a hand of destiny. You talk about contribution is, you know, donation is not just a choice, but an obligation. How did that come together? What triggered you to donate such a substantial amount, which I will talk about a bit more? But what was that moment that you said, you know, I'm going to cut this check? How did you arrive to that point?
As I said earlier, I think we take our success for granted. And one of my beliefs in life is that there are 3 chapters in every person's life. The first chapter is when you're born and everybody's taking care of you. Your parents are feeding you and clothing you and sending you to school, and your teachers are taking care of you. Everybody puts all their efforts in you to become you. And then that chapter finishes, you finish your study, and I finish that chapter when you graduate from whatever school you are, and then you go to the workforce. Now, I think it's a me chapter. It's everything is about me, my home, my job, my children, my vacations. And that me continues. Some people never stop that me. I wanted to stop that me. And I think we have to stop that me because there's a circle here. You have to go back to the origin. You can't just continue with your me action. The third phase of your life is giving back. Because what have you done? You received, you consumed, and what about giving back? And if we all come back to this notion that we have an obligation to our society, and if each person has an obligation to change one life, just one life, I think we will have a much nicer society that is more fulfilling for all to enjoy.
Of course.
So that was my obligation.
But you're being a bit naughty because I wanted to talk about that moment that, you know, you said, I'm going to cut this check. What did that day or that week look like, you know? Was this was this a momentarily decision or you were thinking about it?
I wanted to make a change. And I always believed change comes in small pieces. But if you have the ability to do it in a bigger way, you have an obligation to do it. And one of the things that always bothered me, because I was in construction, I was always the only woman in the room. That stayed with me. And at the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned about my mother. Being in Middle East, independence is such an important thing for women because every turn
even for
of
nations,
century,
Gina, even for nations, it's important in the Middle East.
it's an important aspect that you, as a person, you're a human and you do not have to be dependent on anybody.
That's amazing, Gina. But at the same time, you have been programmed for lifelong learning, for that sense of independence. How are you keeping busy these days? What is this journey transformed to? And how are you continuing to learn and to evolve?
I believe we never stop learning. And as you mentioned, lifelong learning is, I guess, because the society is changing, everything is changing. If we stop learning, then we will stay at the era that we have been. I'm involved in public company boards, which are mainly real estate based. So that helps me to stay connected. I am very well connected to the university, Concordia University and the Gina Cody School. Like yesterday was at the Frosh Week and I was talking to the new students coming on board, and I have speeches every week talking to different audience, mainly on the gender equality and diversity and inclusion. It's something, it's very close to my heart. It has been close to my heart for a long time, and my whole contribution to Concordia as well was based on inclusion and gender diversity and being a making the educational system affordable for everyone, because I believe human beings are equal regardless of their gender, wealth, race, and they should be given the chance to succeed. And that is where a society would be a much better society, because those who have the brain will succeed and they have the drive, they succeed regardless of their wealth or gender or race.
Got it. So when you contributed, you as well created a scholarship of $250,000 to increase the presence of women and minorities. And from where I see it, you are, not a passive giver and donator, but an active giver and donator. Where there is a gap, I guess, even today in 2019, you have created this fund and you have created this platform at Concordia. But again, in Gatineau and other places, you see this gap. Is there an opportunity for some of your contribution to go to the schools as well, in collaboration with Concordia, to have a bottom-up as well, increase the velocity, for the lack of better word, of female talent coming to engineering school?
I am involved with the schools. There is another school in Montreal that I am the female entrepreneur in residence. I try to give talks regularly at different venues for high school students. We at the university, we have expanded girls said they, open house for schools that they come with buses to the school to see what engineering is and how amazing it is. And by talking about it, the fact that we are talking together about it right now, that's, I think, it's, and not forgetting about what happened in Gatineau. Now we are speaking about it a year later. So I think the conversation will make people to realize, and having a university named after a woman make the girls realize that they do belong. Like I go every March 8th, we have on the International Women's Day, we have a big celebration at Concordia, and we bring high school kids. And they're all girls. It's mainly for girls. And you can't imagine. It's so emotional for me. It brings tears to my eyes to see these girls that they are so, and they're young. And we get collaboration from different companies to come. Google comes and, construction companies come. And the students get involved with Space Concordia, shows them how great they can be as a student. We're sending shuttles out to space at the student level. So things that are happening is so amazing. I'm at awe how these youth are performing. They are way better than I was as a student. I can't compare myself with these new generation of students who are coming to universities. They are.
I wanted to ask you, what are your views on Canada's future and prosperity as an immigrant, as a perfect example of a successful immigrant, as a mother, as an engineer, as a philanthropist? Where do you think Canada is heading with all of this winning ingredients, people like yourself and other Canadians? And do you think it's on the right track, or do you like to see some changes?
I think it's on the right track. It could do better. There is always room for improvement. And I think something that is extremely important for any nation, not to become complacent. It's very easy to take things for granted and take one step forward and two back. And we see that happening in a number of developed countries in the world that, makes you raise eyebrows and question why people are following these paths. There is still talking in some countries about abortion being a right for a woman or not, or the right of woman to follow only her husband's views. And these are in the developed countries, and you must have heard about those.
Correct. Now, on that note, and the future of Canada as well is very much a society that big families and big businesses, family businesses, have been fundamental in its findings itself and, you know, the founding fathers of Canada. What is the role of Canadian family businesses, in your opinion, in the prosperity of Canada, in philanthropy, in contribution, and the future?
I think they have a big and major role to play, and they need to foster from the energy, inertia, and the ability that they have to enrich the country in a better way. And many of the families are involved, and I think more should be involved, and especially when it comes to philanthropy and when it comes to participation in the educational system. I think countries will develop and become a better place when the educational systems are fostering and are becoming a better place. And that's why I'm involved in the university. What is happening, the big companies, which are black box, they are controlling our technology and they're not sharing it with each other. Do we want that? Or we want universities to be open and leave the whole community to benefit from it? We see during this pandemic that, you know, even development of vaccine, everybody's concerned somebody is going to hack their system. And I question, why are we so worried that somebody is going to know what you're doing on your vaccine development? This should be all open book. We should be all working together, not who comes first. Imagine if we were all working together.
There is no shortage of ego and short-termism in corporate world, unfortunately. But I want to shift the gear a bit. You were shaped by this push and energy of your late mother. How are you exuding and how are you replicating that with your own two daughters? Are you as well as perhaps demanding as your mom was with you with the girls, or you are a little bit different in your approach?
Okay, the answer would be two different things. If you ask my two daughters, they would say absolutely. If you ask me, I would say no, I'm such a good and soft person.
No, I'm sure you're a great mom, but in terms of that, you know, a push for independence as such, as you rightly said it, is that as strong as your roots, or it's a diluted and more autonomous motherhood?
I hope it is not diluted. I hope they get the message, not only my daughters, I think every woman in the world. I think we have the society, the laws, everything is shaped by men, for men. And, you know, we have been fighting for and struggling for our complete independence and being on boards, being a spokesperson. Still, there are countries that have never had a president woman or women in big powers. So we have a long way to go, and I hope I'm not diluted, and I hope my daughter and their kids will carry the message. And it's a message, it's a better society because it's half the population.
I agree, but when it comes to this gender parity at the leadership level, I think in all sincerity it's more of a U.S. North America for a great extent, and even U.S. issue. Because if you look at Germany, if you look at India, if you look at Taiwan, if you look at New Zealand, if you look at European countries, the Scandinavians, all of them have had female leadership and greatly benefited. So, I mean, in coronavirus, some of the outperforming societies are the ones that are run and led by females, like, you know, Germany, New Zealand, Taiwan, and the rest of it. So I think it's more of an American deficit that is projected to the rest of the world, in all sincerity, because I don't think that countries who have tried female leadership would exchange or trade that necessarily for a male per se. And I think that the deficit in the United States should not eclipse the success in other parts of the world. Gina, what do you think?
I totally agree. And North America is behind in that. But having said that, it's not that recent. This leadership of women in power doesn't go that far. And it took a pandemic to prove that women as a leader could be a great thing.
Your engineering, meticulous addressing of issues, well taken, Gina. Now, your husband is a banker. How does an engineer and a banker get along? How easy is that, or how challenging is
that? I think
that?
It's quite easy because we don't step on each other's toes. And my husband has been an extreme supporter of me, and I don't think I could have got where I have been without his support. And my children, actually, my two daughters always remind me that, you know, I forget to mention them, that they have been great support because they weren't much of a trouble for me. So they allowed me to be out there working hard, putting, you know, 80, 90 hours a week to succeed in my business and be who I wanted to be. Because of having a family that was supporting and, you know, really there for me.
Delighted to hear that. Your name in your mother tongue is Parvane, which means butterfly. You focus your thesis on earthquake engineering. I'm sure everyone agrees that you have really rocked the engineering scene, the philanthropy scene in Canada, and beyond, and caused a good earthquake. So as a butterfly, this is quite a remarkable undertaking. And I wanted to thank you, Gina, for joining me on Round Peg Podcast today. And I hope we can continue this conversation on one of our future episodes.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure talking with you, Ali.
You have been listening to Round Peg Podcast, brought to you by Family Enterprise Foundation and 360 Strategic Advisors. We hope you like what you heard today. You can always subscribe to Spotify, iTunes, or other platforms to hear the next conversation and our new episodes as soon as they become available.